Security VIP is the official podcast of the security industry, from manufacturers to end users and everything in between. Security VIP is your home for nothing but the truth.
You think you know me?
You're listening to the Security VIP Podcast, hosted by Taylor May, the official podcast of the security industry and home of nothing but the truth. Today on Security VIP, we feature a panel discussion on OSDP. Today's panelists include Dave Clark, Babak Javadi, and Tony DiDato. Get ready for nothing but the truth.
Security VIP Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Security VIP Podcast, the official podcast of the security industry and your home for nothing but the truth. As always, I'm your host, Taylor May. And on today's episode, we're discussing the ever so popular topic, OSDP. That's right. As access control continues to evolve, it's important to understand the pros and cons of OSDP and how it is impacting businesses daily and today. With that being said, it's my pleasure to introduce my VIP guest and panelists, Dave Clark, Tony DiDato, and Babak Javadi. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast today. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Now, Dave Clark, you are a veteran now on my podcast series. So do you want to give Tony and Babak just a little overview of how I run my podcast, kind of, you know, what you bring to the table?
Oh, we just, you know, as always, we got to bring the truth. And, you know, as a former support engineer running access control solutions and everything else, I only know how it actually works in the real world. I'm not going to give you a pitch. I'm just going to give you what it actually ends up meaning in the real world.
100%. You know, it's funny, guys, because when I first met Dave a couple years ago, my background in the industry is always sales. It's always been sales. But the best sales guys always learn from the technical guys. You know, tell me the truth. Tell me the reality. Don't give me the vaporware. Don't give me the BS. I want to hear what's going to work.
I'd go a step further, and I'd say the best sales guys are former technical guys.
100%. I could not agree more. And I think that's what we have on this panel right now is all three of you guys. So Tony and Babak, why don't you guys introduce yourselves and your experience real quick for my listeners and followers on this podcast series?
Tony, okay. You go first.
Hey, thanks, Bob. My name is Tony DiDato, and I'm the founder and CTO of Cypress Integration Solutions. And for about the past 35, people keep reminding me it's closer to 40 years, we've been involved in developing a lot of embedded systems that make integrators, end users, and anybody involved in electronic security, making their lives a little easier by providing unique solutions to everyday problems. And I'm also the co-chair of the OSDP working group.
Very cool. Babak.
Hey there, I'm Babak Javadi. I'm the founder and director of research and development for the Core Group and the Red Team Alliance. I'm a professional hacker and covert methods of entry instructor with over 10 years of field experience. And I have a deep passion for hacking hardware and other embedded systems focusing on physical security.
What a cool job, just hacking stuff, man. Dave, what about that job, man? Can you hack stuff like Bubik, man?
Oh, no, man. Sure I can't be that. Can't be that covert with a shirt like that.
Well, all depends on the situation, doesn't it?
Dave, give us your background. Everyone knows who you are, man, but let these guys know who you are.
Yeah, I come from a long background around, but in the access control world, I used to be the head of tech support for Isonis, helped them establish their IP-based edge access control platform, and then more recently helped develop a couple of solutions using facial recognition for frictionless access control, and have had the opportunity to look at products from Cypress and a few others to help implement that. So kind of been in both worlds with new and old, have opened a lot of doors and locked a lot of folks out.
Love it. I'm just going to go and set the tone real quick. All three of these gentlemen are way above my knowledge landscape. So these guys are 10 times smarter than me. I'm not the most educated guy in the world when it comes to this subject matter as well as, you know, OSDP. So I'm excited to kind of discuss this further. And I want to give a shout out to SIA, Security Industry Association, and Edison Shin, as well as Don Erickson, for sponsoring this discussion, because I think this is a very needed topic right now in the industry. But let's talk about it, dive right into it, guys. You know, the evolution of access control, we've seen a change, obviously, with, you know, pandemic. We've seen it early in the days with the key fobs from Wiegand in the 80s. And then now we're at the OSDP age. But talk about that evolution so far in the industry around access control when it comes to old protocols like WIGAN and then making that transition now to OSDP. What has that been like? And I'll kick this off to Dave first so you can share your insight.
No, I think, I think WIGAN is still very prevalent today. I think it's still, you know, a good chunk of the market. We still see it being deployed, especially if you're adding on to legacy systems. And it's one of those things we have, you know, seeing the new, more secure OSDP come up, and then it kind of seems like it's had a little bit of a hurdle getting over the hump and getting widespread adoption and fully replacing the older protocols. So that's kind of something to start with is, you know, with the guys, why are we still seeing that resistance to just deploying OSDP today?
Bobic, you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, it's real straightforward. If we take a look at, first of all, it's very easy for people who are passionate about security, and I'm talking a lot about, you know, even my colleagues in the hacker community, to really kind of get this tunnel vision and say, oh my God, no one understands security. Why are we doing it this way? And if we step back a little bit, what we need to remember is that ultimately, in 99% of these situations, someone is running a business. So security isn't necessarily there for security's sake. For security's sake, it's there to offset liability and risk related to certain aspects of the business. So what that means is that although on its face we're selling security, what we're really selling is a method that hopefully, if done correctly, will maximize the value and the profits of the business. So what that means in practice is that very often security solutions do have elements of security in them, but they have to be optimized for cost because not everyone can afford or needs to be Fort Knox. So very often, the reason why you see a lot of these solutions out there, if you look deeper, you'll see, okay, well, for a lot of folks, they choose WIGAN because it just works, because it's old, it's simple, everything supports it, and that's a valid piece of logic. Or they might select WIGAN because that is the most interoperable solution and they don't have to rip and replace everything. So there's a lot of different contributing factors as to why we still see this stuff out there. It's not always quite as cut and dry as we like to make it out to be when we're talking just sound bites.
Yeah, just to add on to that, I guess, you know, having been, you know, there was the earth cooled and then WIGAN appeared and we started doing access control. No, it's not that simple. I'm being a wise guy. But yeah, my experience goes way, way back when WIGAN was just practically the simplest way to implement sending a couple of bits, you know, over a wire using a couple of transistors and a magnetic read head. I mean, it was just so cheap to do. And that's literally what the readers were at the time. So then the controller had to basically see spikes on a wire and make sense of that. And then they got a little bit smarter, started putting microprocessors in the peripheral devices. And then it was just a natural to keep going back to WIGAN. And we bash WIGAN a lot, but there's a lot of unidirectional protocols that are still in use, Magstripe, Barcode, to name a few. And they still have their uses. You know, in Bobic would be the first to be able to expound on that a little bit better than I can, as to when you might absolutely need a encrypted protocol going to a peripheral device. And then there are some times when, well, you really don't need it, depending on your risk assessment and things of that nature. But, you know, OSDP takes another step up the chain a little bit, makes it a little more heavier investment in R&D on the part of your programmers to implement. It's a minor cost, you know, pennies we're talking about for a hardware enhancement based on what's out there right now. But like a lot of things, even when Ethernet first kind of came into the security marketplace, not all of us went out and developed our own TCP/IP stacks. We went off and we bought a little device that did it for us, tried it out, tested the market and said, hey, that was pretty cool. People like it. Okay, we'll invest the time now and invest programmer resources in developing our own version to reduce cost. And I think OSDP is following that same track.
Yeah, it ultimately comes down to cost of defense versus cost of compromise. So if we think about when Wiegand was just hitting the market, it was cutting edge, it was bleeding edge in the mid 80s, it was advanced enough that if someone wanted to compromise a Wiegand system or defeat it, really your level of skill and the access to tools that you would need would be significantly above average, right? You'd be selecting and filtering for a relatively small group of people that would have the interest, skill set, and resources necessary to compromise that particular system. Meanwhile, the advantages and convenience that it brought to the businesses was huge. It was massive, right? Over time, that changes. Over time, not only does the cost of production go down, but also the cost of compromise also goes down. Protocols become more well understood, cost of new tools comes down. And so while defeating something, 20, 30 years ago might have cost many thousands of dollars and a lot of experience, today might cost $50 or $40 and almost no experience. And that's just a natural progression. So this is the everlasting battle that we have in security, is this constant game of walls and ladders. And we keep having to build taller walls because people keep building their ladders taller and taller. And that's just it. It's part of the game.
Yeah, good points there, Dave. And this reminds me, man, back in the old days of AnyVision, dude, those Thibaut devices, brother. You want to talk about those Thibauts real quick?
Well, I think there's a lot of interest of, trying to add different pieces of hardware into the access control scheme. So we have state-of-the-art IP-based devices that all work off of Ethernet. And then we have our legacy, basically serial or, Wiegand devices. And how do we build the bridges between the two worlds? And that's always kind of a real challenge, because we might be working with something that's basically, technology from last week. But how do we integrate that into our existing legacy security infrastructure and possibly enhance security or ease of use?
Ease of use is what it's all about nowadays, especially with all the new technology around access control. Obviously, mobile was hot for a while. You saw facial recognition being used. Alcatraz is a company that is face authentication for access control. So access control has definitely changed. But let's take a step back real quick, just for our listeners and followers. Tell me what the definition of OSDP stands for, and kind of the benefits and pros with it. Who wants to take that? Let's start with Bobek. Why don't you take this for us, Ben?
Oh, sure. So OSDP stands for Open Supervised Device Protocol. And the open supervised part is really kind of what differentiates it from the previous generations. So traditionally, there weren't many common device protocols to establish communication between endpoint devices such as readers and, say, more backend devices such as controllers and stuff like that. Wiegand started as a proprietary protocol that everyone started supporting because, they needed that backwards compatibility to make the sale, and then eventually got so prevalent that it got adopted as an open standard. And then since then, between Wiegand and OSDP, there were a bunch of newer competing things, but nothing that really had unified buy-in. So the open part really just means this is a protocol that is freely published and is designed to be interoperable. We try to take feedback in from multiple entities, multiple vendors that are technically competitors, but they're all coming together to try to contribute to this open standard. And the supervised part is also key from a reliability and functionality standpoint, because as Tony mentioned, a lot of those older traditional protocols were one way, meaning their reader had no way of really knowing if it's still connected to the controller. And conversely, the controller didn't really have a way of knowing if there's any problem with the line or if the reader is even still connected, because the only time there was any communication was when someone presented a badge. So 8 hours go by, you don't get a badge read. Maybe it's because no one showed up for 8 hours, or maybe it's because the lines are cut. With supervision, you get all these advantages related to the ability to be able to talk and check the reader to see, hey, are you still there? Are you still there? So then both endpoint devices have a constant understanding of what's the current state. Is the line still good? Am I still connected? What's the current status? And that's enabled us to add a lot of really great extra functionality into the protocol that makes everything from deployment to maintenance and, of course, security more robust and possible.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, the two key factors there. The supervision, that was something that hit me right off the bat when I first started to get into access control. The access control portion of the security marketplace. I had done a lot of residential alarms, commercial alarm systems back in the early 80s, and everything you installed was supervised. So if you had a door contact, you always put some means of supervision there, an end-of-line resistor, something to let you know that the panel itself was not just monitoring a short circuit a few inches away from the panel. It was actually going out 100 feet, seeing the contact and actually getting valid status. And then the first thing that struck me in the access control was swipe the badge. If you get it, great. If not, oh, well, you know, it was sort of this, we don't really have time to worry about that problem. And I remember one of our first products that Cypress did was a supervision module. And that's ostensibly what it was supposed to do, just to add that little bit of supervision to that wire. At the request of a large customer. It's one of those things I thought, I'll sell 10 of these and that'll be the end of it. It wound up sort of putting us on the map. But that supervision aspect is extremely important and often gets overlooked. And as Bobby said, the openness, we had, at least three attempts at establishing some kind of a multi-drop protocol for card readers over the years. And, I did the same thing that everybody else did, when you're young and you start a company, it's like, hey, I got the best widget on the market. Everybody follow me.
Right.
That just doesn't happen.
It's like this joke where, you look at the market and you're like, oh my God, there's, 13 competing standards. These are all garbage. Like we need one new standard that like to rule them all. And then all of a sudden there's 14 competing standards. Right. And it just keeps going. So it's really hard to break the cycle.
Yeah. It's the old myth that if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. Well, who said that? Benjamin Franklin, the most famous person on the planet. Well, yeah, if he says it, everybody's going to follow him. Me, right. Nobody gives a crap, So, it's an interesting experience, but that openness, having the industry stakeholders, competitors, coming together and saying, all right, we're going to do this. It's got to be done. Let's just hunker down and do it, and we'll all do a little compromise and we'll all get through it. That's where we are right now.
Yeah. So, but one of the things with today and this taking so long for OSTP to get going, why not just make the jump to something even more open like Ethernet and just go to a standard cabling standard that everybody's using today with pulling?
Cost.
I think you want to take that first.
Or? Yeah. So you're absolutely right, Dave. It seems like the obvious question, like why these half measures or what looks like a half measure, right? So if you think back to like when, let's just talk about like when Wigand first made it big, right? Original Wigand swipe cards, right? Game changer from a physical security perspective, gave people all these extra features and functionality. They didn't have to worry about mag stripes, wearing out, stuff like that. And then it was so prevalent, you start installing it, you have thousands and thousands of users, hundreds or thousands of doors, and then all of a sudden new technology comes out and someone says, well, this is so much better. We got encryption, we got this, we got that. And the first question is, cool, how much does it cost? And if you have to rip and replace everything, how many people are going to buy it? In practice, not many, right? It just, from business perspective, it doesn't make sense. And that's one of the reasons why Wigand stuck around so long. Similarly, when we're talking about developing a new industry protocol that we're all going to adopt, it has to add extra features, functionality, and security. But most importantly, it has to be adopted, because you can design whatever the heck you want, but if people don't actually adopt it, it's useless, right? And even OSDP took years to actually get vendors to adopt it, even as simple as it was. And so a few of the important design philosophies that went into OSDP was, in trying to bring in this additional functionality and security, how do we also balance the cost of engineering from the vendor's perspective? Because from a manufacturer's standpoint, they already have a product that sells. So what's their impetus to actually spend the engineering dollars to change all their products around to adopt this new thing, right? So they have to spend resources. Then it's also all of the existing wiring. One of the most expensive parts of any access control system is drawing cabling, drawing wiring. And there's all these different constraints that you're constantly battling. So OSDP said, all right, what if, you know, we're trying to transition away from WGAN, which is a two-wire protocol. What if we stuck with two wires for data, right? It restricts us to half duplex, but maybe for most cases, that's good enough. And it also means that in many, but not all cases, people may have an opportunity to reuse wire runs. And it's also something that all of the integrators and installers, that they're going to be used to drawing cable with X number of wires. They're used to handling what the bend radius is going to be. They're used to how thick or heavy the wire is. The cost of the wiring is similar, right? There's a lot of similarities that don't rock the boat too much. And then from the OEM, from the manufacturer perspective, there is an extra cost of development, right? It's not just a couple of cents for, you know, some other extra chip, but it's the actual software and systems development. Then their cost is also this kind of in between, between something completely different and something that is a moderate improvement, right? And I do think that just like with anything else, there's always going to be, you know, room for improvement and areas of opportunity. You can ask anyone, you know, what they think about OSDP, and everyone's going to have a different perspective on like, what's the one thing they would change if they had an opportunity. But as a whole, if we look at it from the perspective of what does it take to actually get adopted, I think this was the best choice. As far as Ethernet goes, we're probably going to be switching to that more and more down the line, but we're a few years away from that, in my opinion, before we really start seeing that. We're kind of in this intermediate transition stage.
Yeah, it's interesting. And Dave, you'd appreciate this. I think it was sometime in the mid to late 90s, Isonas came out with the Ethernet reader. Is that about the time frame?
The edge, basically the... It's Ethernet, and they're putting the controller at the door.
Yeah, yeah, it was the very first version. I remember it vividly because I was a couple of booths over at ISC West, I believe it was, and I saw that, and I'm like, oh, okay, there we go. Well, great, I don't have to worry about WGAN anymore. This is going to take over, and that'll be the end of it. That's the way it should be. And how many decades have gone by? Even me, you know, I'm an engineer at heart, and I saw that as an ultimate technology. It's like, well, there it is. That's got everything you ever need. Boom. They've done it. They've done a great job. That's going to take over. And I was probably as surprised as the folks at Isonas when it must have been very hard to get people to adopt and use that because of the infrastructure that was required to move with it, as Bobic alluded to, just trying to move that huge freighter, make that turn.
Also distance limitations. What's the maximum wire run for Ethernet, even under best case scenario?
Feet?
Well, no, you got, it's power over Ethernet, so it's even shorter.
It's even shorter, right? So then you're like, oh, well, why don't you use, you know, power over Ethernet for most of your stuff? And then once in a while, when you have that, you know, vehicle gate or that parking lot gate out in the middle of nowhere, then you can just use this other protocol for that. In practice, that's a non-starter. You're increasing the cost of all your parts and everything for a non-unified system.
Yeah, well, I think that's, why don't we, you know, just for the folks listening, if they're not, do it. What are the limitations of WGAN and OSDP wire runs versus, you know, Ethernet, you're about, you know, 100 meters, 300 feet. And then with power over Ethernet, you're getting power loss after 100 feet. So that's that side I know very well. What are the limitations of the other protocols?
WGAN is what, 500 feet, Tony?
Yeah, that was pretty much everyday encounter, 500 feet.
And with proper like twisted pair cabling for OSDP, we've seen a couple thousand, right?
Yeah, we've done a lot of testing, and again, it's all baud rate. If you're running 9600 baud, honest to God, you can go about 10,000 feet on pretty much any wiring, We've proven that to death. I don't recommend it. It's not a best practice.
Right.
It's just an engineering, you know, academic exercise. Yes, you could do it.
It's a lot more.
But typically 4,000 feet is a typical run at just about any speed.
And that's also really key for these wire limitations pop up in really unexpected ways. So for example, we were doing a pen test on a data center a few years back. It was monstrous, absolutely monstrous. And what we found during the test is that they had to put door controllers, the data hall itself was so large that they had to put door controllers in areas that weren't technically secured because they had these secure cages inside the data hall that they had to get, you know, access control into, but you only have this 500 foot limit. So 500 feet, you know, including going up and over walls and in between walls, doesn't give you a lot of options. So what ended up happening is the controller that controlled access to a extremely sensitive area was actually just in an HVAC maintenance room that third parties had access to because they just couldn't find a better solution. And that's not that uncommon. It's not something that people talk about a lot, but it's the kind of like random, like a slapdash solution that gets put into place all the time, but we don't think about it during the design stage because again, it's so easy to have that tunnel vision and not realize all these different edge cases. The industry is made of more edge cases than non-edge cases sometimes it seems, but we don't really see that off the bat.
Yeah, I'd say I've definitely run into where the architect has made it nearly impossible for your wire run and it ends up being very creative on how it has to be installed.
A lot of good talking points here, guys. We talked about cost. We talked about some of the challenges with today's market around adopting Ethernet versus OSDP and even the evolution from Wigan, making it more practical. But I guess what is the current adoption rate right now with OSDP in the market? You know, what verticals are doing it the most? What manufacturers are promoting it the most? What do you guys see right now as the current adoption rate for this protocol? Tony, I'll kick that to you first.
Yeah, thanks. We are in a unique position. We're not a reader manufacturer or a peripheral manufacturer per se. We're not a panel manufacturer. We're basically replacing wire. We do a lot of protocol converters. We do a lot of distance extenders and different media converters. So if you wanted to go, you know, in the past, you would take a Wigan signal, as Bobic said, you had 500 feet. Well, if you needed to go 10,000 feet with a Wigan signal, well, we can get you there. We had all kinds of fiber optic solutions and wireless solutions that would get you that distance. So now, from being in that position where people have been coming to us for many, many decades for these kinds of solutions, we are just getting every day an increasing number of requests for XYZ to OSDP and OSDP do something else. And, it's a lot of integrators who are encountering it or are being told thou shalt put in an OSDP reader. And then they come to us with a lot of questions and some possible incompatibilities, that sort of thing. But the number of, end users that contact us for information and solutions is really increasing. And I mean, Fortune 500 end users.
Right.
Yeah, adoption's an interesting thing because it has to exist before you can adopt it. And the way that Tony and I actually first met each other many, many years back was, again, we had done a pen test for a client. They had a very unique and specific risk model that did expose them to more advanced threat actors. And one of the things that we wanted to try to solve for them is how do we reduce the risk related to data like credential interception and replay attacks that exist with Wigand and other non-encrypted protocols. And that's when I had first come across OSDP at the time. And it was right when OSDP version 2 was secure channel was kind of making the rounds very, very slowly, but only in theory. In practice, what I found was no one except for like one or two vendors supported it. And only then, even then, only in theory. And it wasn't until I ran across, Cypress's module at the time that we were even able to build a solution that, you know, protected this link, you know, encrypted this link. And at the time, one of the things that I did was I would be going around to these security trade shows, you know, like ISC and others, and I'd go from booth to booth for my own sake. I wanted to know who the heck supports this protocol. And I talked to everyone. I said, do you guys support OSDP? And if not, what are your plans? And, you know, how long ago was that, Tony? Was that 7 years ago, 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think that was like 2015.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Most of the vendors, their answer was, what are you on about? We have no idea what you're talking about. You must be some guy who doesn't know what's going on, right? And then the few that did know about OSDP, their response was, well, no one's really asking for that yet. Which from my perspective, you know, if customers don't know what's on the secret menu, how do you expect them to order it, right? So it's been this long drawn out process getting the exposure, but now you've had so many customers asking for it. Once a few major vendors started supporting it, then if you're a vendor who doesn't support it, now you're behind. Now you, yep, you have a hard time competing. So as far as new installations go, if you today go out and you say, I'm going to do a brand new system, new controller, new readers, the whole nine yards, I would be flabbergasted if they installed a WGAN system. It is happening still, but like I would say greater than 90, 95% of those systems today, from most dealers, they're going to be OSDP if they're brand new systems. Where you're still seeing WGAN is going to be in cases where either there's an extreme cost constraint, like if you're out in certain other parts of the world, or if you're dealing with legacy systems and you have a problem with having mixed systems like WGAN and OSDP. And this has been a problem a few of my clients have had, where they'll say, look, the problem we have right now is when we start mixing in OSDP with WGAN, we're running into really oddball issues where the maintenance staff doesn't really know what to expect and the troubleshooting processes are different. And so that's where we're still seeing WGAN is existing legacy systems. If you have a huge, monstrous existing system and you're just replacing a few components, then you're going to be still on WGAN. But if you're installing a new system, it's almost certainly going to be OSDP today.
Are there any disadvantages with OSDP right now? And I know, Bobak, you mentioned, you know, why legacy systems is just easier for WGAN right now. But what are the I guess, cons of this protocol right now? And let's kick this to Dave. Let's take this for you real quick.
Well, I think it's the third-party interoperability is the one I've run into the most, is just bringing in a device where you can, you know, if you're trying to hook up something else to the access control that isn't a standard access control product, it's hard to tap into. Is that my biggest thing I've run into.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
I would say the couple of things that I would call out as far as limitations. So earlier, Tony mentioned speed. You know, we made some collectively some design compromises in the protocol in order to meet these other constraints of, you know, making sure it's cost effective, making sure it's easily adoptable, easily deployable, all those things. Well, what that means is in order to be easily backwards compatible with older wiring, we had to stick with two wires. So that means half duplex instead of full duplex, which means only one device can be transmitting at any given moment in time. It's not a huge deal, but it does limit transmission speed and data rates. Additionally, as Tony mentioned, if you're looking at really, really long runs of wire, again, you can do it, but you might not be able to go as fast. Now, when we're just moving really small bits of data around, like, you know, whether it's 26 or 44 or 50 or whatever number of WGAN bits of credential data, it's not really a big deal. You don't appreciably notice any kind of difference. Where we start running into limitations with that is when we start wanting to move larger amounts of data. Fingerprint templates, advanced bidirectional authentication related to, say, like PIV or other certificate-based smart cards, things like that, we'll begin to see a little bit of a longer delay as we try to push more and more data through it. So I would say that's probably one of the more technical limitations that just kind of comes with the territory. And then the other limitation, just to continue what Dave was saying, is the support piece. There's still a lot of you know, integrators and installers out there that just don't have that much experience on the OSTP side. It's not because they're not interested. It's because the industry is running so lean and things are so competitive that if you tell someone that, you know, they're going to be without their guys for 2-3 days while they go to training, that's a non-starter for a lot of companies, right? So they have to like shove training in wherever they can. And finally, like, yeah, it's a newer protocol. You know, there's still a few differences in implementations here and there between vendors, but that's being smoothed out. We have the OSTP verified program, which makes sure that different devices from different vendors are conforming to the same expected behavior, conforming to the specification as we expect. And so we're optimistic, cautiously optimistic that those types of interoperability concerns and weird quirks, they're going to be diminishing pretty quickly and pretty rapidly over the next, months to year, like 1 or 2 years, basically.
Yeah, that's well put, Babak, as usual. And one of the things that we continually forget is the fact that the whole purpose of this was to replace Wigan. That was number one on the list, and do so cost effectively. Everything else was going to be gravy. You know, once we do this and we do it in a certain way with this bidirectional protocol and supervised and we had working groups and we had buy-in. Well, look at all the other cool things you can do, the interoperability, you know, obviously the security was baked in right from the beginning. So it's taken a while for that aspect of things to flourish. And it's kind of reminiscent of any of us who've been through watching a protocol develop. I can remember back in the early 90s, my God, it was almost impossible to connect to the internet at one point. I mean, everybody said, yeah, just grab your modem, kid, and, you know, dial the number and boom, you're there. Didn't always happen that way. There was so many incompatibilities. And with a standards body, I'm not an expert on standards, Edison from SIA is our standards expert. And just the benefit of having a working group, having a robust ecosystem to work out all these details. You're not, as an engineer, you're not sitting in a vacuum saying, well, this is the way I'm going to do it, and the hell with everybody else. You get everybody's buy-in, and you march up this ladder, together, and it's a little bit easier than it. Than if you're trying to ram it down somebody's throat.
It definitely feels like herding cats, and the success of any standard depends on how much those cats adapt to being herded over time, right? Yeah. Just as much like, so if we take a look at common examples where people fight and are like digging their heels for apparently no reason, like Ford versus Chevy or, you know, different sports teams, stuff like that, different rivalries. Believe it or not, engineers are exactly as opinionated and obstinate when it comes to different ways of implementing solutions. So you have the natural propensity for people to like dig their heels in and say like, no, I'm more right than you are. Mix that in with an additional layer asking vendors who are technically competitors to work together to agree on something, and then plus add all the other normal cost and business constraints in, it's hard. It's hard to get a standard completed, let alone adopted. So that's one of the things that I think is not really apparent and clear from the outside is exactly how much collective effort has to go in to make a standard successful. And it's an incredible amount. So for all the limitations that we have, I have to say at a high level, I'm very pleased overall with being able to use OSTP the way that we can today, because there just, you know, simply weren't a lot of other great alternatives that met all the same requirements.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I just like the first letter of OSTP because it stands for open, and I feel like we should trademark the word open in this industry. We talk about interoperability because I'm just
that wouldn't be very open, would it? If we trademarked it.
It should be the gold standard though for every customer to integrate into their platform, whether it's access control or video surveillance, man, because anytime you're locked in, Dave knows about this, is you're trapped. And
we're just talking about the wiring. Once you go up a level or two, that card to readers. That's a nice, the solid lock-in that this industry is not going to give up.
That's why I like, I mean, because like the adoption rate in the industry, I mean, you talk about manufacturers promoting this the most, but you look at a company like Acre, who purchased RS2 and Open Options and Vanderbilt and a couple other access control manufacturers. Is it going to take something like a huge company to consolidate all these competitors into one brand to promote a protocol like this? Or you think,
no.
You think it's going to be different silos like that?
Mass consolidation is the enemy of success here, because once you have mass consolidation, there is actually less motivation to change and improve. And the reason for adopting or not adopting something can just be because you're big enough, and not necessarily because it's the right thing to do. Remembering again that businesses exist primarily to make money. Like security companies, let's be frank for a moment, they don't exist for the good of the people. They exist to make money. They do that by selling a product that we all value. It happens to be security, but it does not exist as a charity. It exists to make money. So you need to keep that in mind when we look at stuff like this.
No, I agree. I mean, it comes down to future proofing. What are you doing for the next 5 or 10 years? And it just seems like OSTP is the common answer to all this, right? I mean, Tony, what are your thoughts on kind of the evolution of OSTP moving forward?
Yeah, I never thought I'd be in the Wiegand business. When I started the company, back in the early 80s, it was Cypress Computer Systems. We just wanted to get in on this computer thing. We had no idea where we were going. And security was sort of a natural place that a lot of our ideas and products found some traction. But in watching Wiegand sort of evolve and go through its iterations and evolutions and all that, it's almost like Back to the Future. We're watching it again on a different platform, much better and robust sort of ecosystem that has surrounded it and somewhat embraced it. And it's actually, I'm pretty confident that, we're heading in the right direction. I'm a bit of an optimist as well, but, I see it really, really flourishing over the next few years.
Dave, you're on the OEM side, man, and this is like one of a hot item I always like to talk about is we saw cloud hit the market like 20 years ago, whatever it was, people are still resistant to go into the cloud, and it's been a very hardcore education piece to even adopt cloud into clients' environments. So I don't see that necessarily with OSDP. Correct me if I'm wrong with the education piece.
Yeah, this is a much easier leap instead of totally redoing the technology. We're just talking about upgrading a protocol over basically the same wiring. Your barriers to entry and adoption are much, much lower than changing your fundamental topology and where your data is stored. This is an evolutionary step, not a leap.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to see it get out there, but I'd say it's interesting to see why it's. I've done new buildings in the last 18 months that are still Wiegand. And I like it because I could interface with it, but that ability for me to interface third-party things is also the security risk.
Yeah, it's cheap. Wiegand's cheap and fast to deploy. Like right. It's so old at this point. Wiegand was, the original patent was what, 76, Tony? Was it 1976 when John Wiegand invented it? So it's an ancient protocol at this point. So yeah, it's not changing. It's easy. It's dirt cheap to implement. So of course, it's still going to be popular. In terms of looking forward to the future, what I see is, we seem to, in all aspects of technology, have an insatiable appetite for more and more data being pushed through. And that applies to security as well. So I imagine that as time goes on, we might start running into some of the speed and other limitations related to the current generation of protocols. And we'll start seeing evolutions again being applied to that. So one of the cool things about OSDP that Tony likes to talk about and bring up from time to time, although it's not super common yet, is that OSDP does not have to be implemented over only RS-485, which is the physical layer. OSDP can also be implemented over Ethernet. It could be implemented over wireless. It can be implemented over any different physical medium. And so there's a lot of interesting opportunity here to kind of segue into merging OSDP with other technologies in order to achieve, you know, higher data rates or other other goals.
Yeah, I do have those two tin cans and fishing string that we will make it work one day. So, but yeah, yeah, we can kind of put us on the map. So, you know, if anybody was had a investment in it, would be our company. You know, Cypress has really been the go-to guys for Wigan. We're the first to want to see it go away, although we'll continue to provide solutions for customers as they need it. But you know, we just see OSDP as just sort of putting away this one problem that's been sort of nagging us.
One of many
in the background. And yeah, it's going to take a little bit. We've got a, you know, a verification program that we're putting in place so that we can validate vendors' products, so it's got all the earmarks and all the trimmings of a robust ecosystem, and you know, it's been fun actually. As an engineer, as Bobic said, you know, we kind of dig our heels in and want to do things our way, but it has actually been very enjoyable, very fruitful camaraderie, you know, amongst all the participants in these groups, and we really invite more people, as many people as want to be involved, to get in there and voice your opinion.
Yeah, that's why I think it's important, the great things that Sia Edison and Don Erickson are doing over there to educate integrators and clients about this protocol to hopefully make it more of a seamless transition when we talk about access control and making everything more secure. So guys, as we wrap up this episode, final thoughts, recommendations that you guys would have for clients to just adopt this faster, put it in? I mean, what are some final thoughts that you guys want to share on this episode? I'll kick it off to Bavik. You start to kick us off, dude.
Well, I think in general, you want to start with asking for what the best, you know, functionality and security combination is. And right now, from an interoperability standpoint, that's going to be OSDP, in my opinion, currently. Now, when you run into potential resistance, the question always has to be, well, why? What's the reason that we might not be able to implement this, or we don't want to? Is it because the integrator is not comfortable with it? Is it because we have these other like parts of the system or parts of the company that are running this like really old, archaic piece of hardware that we have to like integrate with or something? It's sometimes a more nuanced and complex issue, but as a whole, I strongly recommend making sure that, you know, all the products that you're buying today, even if you're not immediately implementing OSDP, if you're buying a new controller, even if you're currently still going to be running Wigand, make sure it at least supports OSDP so you can transition to it down the line. If you're buying new readers, again, even if you're running them Wigand right now, at least make sure they support OSDP and understand what that transition process looks like. So for example, some readers, in order to use OSDP, you have to move the wires to different pins. Others, you can reuse the same pins. So even just beginning to build in your own mind and for yourselves, what does that transition plan look like? What are all of the milestones that we have to hit in order to get there? Even if you don't do it tomorrow, if you don't have a plan to get there, then it's always going to be this giant question mark. Whereas if you at least start mapping it out, it doesn't cost you anything to map it out. You don't have to spend a dollar other than maybe some, you know, payroll labor for your time to actually start mapping things out to see, okay, what does this actually look like in terms of time and resources, and what do we gain from it? And the last thing that I would mention is OSDP by itself is good, but the key here from a security perspective is also making sure secure channel is enabled and supported by all the devices as well. So that encryption piece is not automatic and not required for devices to always have on. So you want to make sure that on the installation and deployment side, that not only are we installing devices and running OSDP, but we also have that encryption activated and functional so that we have that extra layer of protection for our credential data.
Totally. I think, you know, as we're talking, thinking the timelines through all this stuff, access control deployments last a long time. You're looking at 10, 15 years down the road on how long this gear might be in the walls. So thinking about that, and then in this competitive marketplace, how do you add value? If you come in and can talk to the end user that you're deploying current technology or what's going to be the future, that also gives you that up to maybe, you know, win your bid or, you know, stand apart against your competitors who might be, you know, able to great, you know, they're offering a great price on stuff that's already 15 years, 20 years old.
Tony, bring us home, dude.
Yeah. I just want to comment on what Bobic mentioned about the sort of the educational aspect of it is making sure that as we go forward, you know, in the days, Wiegand was always that we'd get that panic call. The guy's up on the 20-foot ladder, his hands in the junction box, and then he's calling for help me, please. Sort of that last minute solution for Wiegand and other problems like that. So I think with OSDP, if we just sort of take a breath and just say, all right, look, we need to get the integrator, the end user, the manufacturer, all sort of talking on the same page, make sure we all understand what we're getting ourselves into, and then go forward, rather than this sort of whimsical, well, it says OSDP, it must work, you know. So yeah, nothing's like that. Nothing we buy off the shelf at Best Buy works like that. I mean, there's always some kind of configuration. There's always some kind of understanding you have to have. And this is no different. So, you know, just make sure there's a lot of resources that are coming online and take advantage of them.
You mean to tell me there's no easy button for this, guys?
Not yet. We're always working toward that. As a working group, we're always trying to hit that button.
I love it. So, guys, if people want to get more involved about OSDP, want to learn more about you guys, want to ask the right questions, you know, what's good contact information for all three of you individuals? Let's, Bobic, kick us off, dude.
So I can be reached at either my consulting site, alpha@enterthecore.net. Our website is enterthecore.net. Or on the Red Team training side, we also have Red Team Alliance. You can reach me at Bobic, B-A-B-A-K, at redteamalliance.com.
Yeah, for me, it's Tony, T-O-N-Y, at C-Y-P-R-X, as an x-ray, .com. And it's heavily spammed. Sorry. I have to get one of Bobic's people to take a look at that. But yeah, that and our Cypress's website. We also have a lot of links to educational material on our OSDP section. So it's cypressintegration.com.
I can be reached at develacy.com. We're happy to provide you know, all kinds of technology for your video solutions and OEM hardware for all kinds of access control needs.
And looks like Edison hooked us up. URL is securityindustry.org/OSDP. Again, that's securityindustry.org/OSDP.
There you go. Thank you, Edison. And thank all three of you guys for hopping on today.
Thank I know you
this
guys.
It was
a pleasure.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Really good discussion. Really appreciate the time. Guys, again, check out all three of these individuals. Check out Sia. See what the great things they're doing around OSDP. Let's make this more adopted here in the industry, because I think we're all going to be healthier and better for it as we move forward. So any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email me at info@securityvip.net. Once again, that email is info@securityvip.net. This episode will be published on all social media sites as always. So make sure to check us out on YouTube. Listen to us on Spotify if you're on the road. And for all the latest announcements and features about Security VIP, make sure to hit that follow button on LinkedIn. You guys stay safe out there. We'll catch you guys on the next one.